Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Cyril Quinn Review. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next 45 minutes as we discuss the world of sports on this 27th of September 2014. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can follow me on Twitter at William Gerald or go to my website, CyrilGeraldQuinn.com, or find me on Facebook at facebook.com/CyrilQuinn. We begin with the captain. And for somebody who despises the Yankees, I hate the Yankees. With their passion. I mean, that 2001 World Series, 2003 World Series, 2004 ALCS, it was beautiful. Beautiful for me to watch as the Yankees fell, especially to the Red Sox. The Red Sox in 2004, being up 3-0 and falling the way they fell, I enjoyed every moment of it. But I'll put that aside for now and pay tribute to a player who has carried himself and performed as well as any player in this generation, and not in all sports. Okay, when you talk about Derek Jeter, talk about guys, and you think about it. Listen, there are better players and better athletes than Derek Jeter, but when you combine everything, the talent, the class, being clutch, how he carries himself off the field, never got in trouble. Joe Torre or Joe Girardi ever had that 3 o'clock in the morning phone call. You might wanna. Are you standing and sitting? You heard Derek's been. No, that never happened with Jeter. Never. So the intangibles. When you combine everything, he did it as well as again. Any athlete in this generation. I mean, they've been better guys. I mean, Alex Rodriguez is a better player than Derek Jeter. Steroid use, how he conducted himself off the field. And to me, when I look at Jeter, I think of a player who, on the largest stage, New York City, which we've seen get swallow up guys. No matter how talented they are, from all different sports. You know, you see a guy come off a career year, he gets paid, he goes to New York, and in some cases you never hear that guy again. Move on. But ever since he came on the scene in 1996, won a championship, clutch hits, he has been institution basically for the last 20 years, and you know, 20 years at shortstop, we know how many hits, over close to 3,500 hits, 3,463 hits, the 321 World Series career average, the 5 championships. You know, to be that good for that long speaks, you know, to a guy who just brought it day in and day out. He never took a day off. I mean, how many years did he play 150 games? at a physically grueling position. And to me, he doesn't, I heard some, of course, Keith Olbermann says he's overrated, called him overrated, which is comical. But, I mean, I could somewhat make a case that he may be even a little bit underrated in terms of his talent. I mean, people talk about Jeter, they talk about intangibles, and he's a winner. No, he's got a lot of talent. Like, you don't, you're talking about a guy who's a, was a, you know, was in that mold of a A-Rod or a Cal Ripken, 6'3", that the new, he was part of that new shortstop who were guys, who were guys who were great athletes, as well as just being, guys who could, who were good defenders at that position. Guys who can hit. Cal Ripken started it. And Alex Rodriguez, Nomar Garcia-Para, there were a number of them that came along in the mid to late 90s. Now you have, of course, a guy like a true Troy Tulowitzki, who can't stay on the field, but when he's healthy, is a top five player. The Jeter was part of that new wave of shortstop. And again, if I'm, he has to be considered one of the top two or three shortstops of all time. I mean, when you take who, I would take, you probably take Cal Ripken over him, and maybe that's it. And I'm talking about in terms of complete shortstops. I mean, guys that can hit and field. Ozzie Smith, the greatest defensive shortstop ever, one of the greatest defensive players ever, couldn't hit like Jeter. So, you're talking about a guy, again, a guy who I think is underrated from a talent standpoint. It'll be very interesting to see in 2020 what percentage of Hall of Fame votes he gets to, because nobody's ever gotten 100%. There's some talk that he might be the first to get 100%. Certainly now a end of an era. The core four, all of them retired now, with Rivera, Posada, Pettitte, and now Jeter being the last link. And I think it was right. I think it was supposed to happen the way it happened, as far as Jeter being the fourth and final piece of that quartet to call it a career. 347-215-6180 is your call number. Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. When we return, we'll have Saturday morning headlines and the Redskin report that's coming up on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Problem with it, Phil Mickelson basically said, listen, whatever it takes for the team to win, I'll be, supporting the team. I mean, you're talking about Grand Slam winners. I mean, Mickelson's a Hall of Famer right now. You know, five-time Grand Slam winner. Not having a great year, but certainly had enough points to qualify for the Ryder Cup. And, you know, it'll be very interesting to see this play out. We all know the Ryder Cup is not about individual greatness. It's as much as it is about guys who just know how to, you know, certain players just play differently at the Ryder Cup compared to others. I mean, certain guys you might not hear from throughout the course of the year, all of a sudden the Ryder Cup, they become superstars. I mean, Sergio Garcia, you know, has been a good player, come up short in clutch situations at majors, but has been an all-world Ryder Cup player. I mean, he's been just off the charts. If he played, you know, the Ryder Cup, if he played the tour like the Ryder Cup, he would have about six or seven majors right now. So, you know, some guys, you know, just play. Colin Montgomery was a great Ryder Cup player. I mean, so Europe has had some, you know, has some great players, has had some great performers at the Ryder Cup. And that's, you know, the biggest reason why they've had the USA's number in the last decade or so. So we'll see what happens as that progresses. Of course, the Ryder Cup going on as we speak right now in Scotland. So USA is going to have to go take, you know, we're going to have to win this on the road to regain the Ryder Cup. Of course, the last one we saw a couple of years ago, the Europe came back from a pretty significant deficit to take out the USA in Chicago. Celtic point guard Rajon Rondo breaks his hand in a fall, apparently at his home. He's going to be out 6 to 8 weeks. I'm always questionable, nervous about these mysterious injuries, especially at home, off the court. You know, not when a guy's working out, not when a guy's playing pickup, but just at home. Like, you know, apparently he fell in the shower. I mean, I anticipate that he has a bigger bathroom and bigger shower than most people, considering that he's a millionaire. But, I'm sorry. I mean, it's not impossible, but it just doesn't, you know. Most people who fall in the shower don't break, unless they're older and just whose limbs are brittle, don't break bones. It just, I don't know. I'll be very curious over the next couple of weeks, next couple of days, to hear more about this story, because everything just doesn't add up. Rondo's telling the Celtics that he slipped in the shower. He slipped. I don't know. It just sounds kind of convenient. It really does. Especially considering that, now I'm not saying he was trying to purposely injure himself. No, I'm not saying that at all. But just, I mean, a guy just slipping in it. It just, I don't know. I don't believe it. I'm just going to come out and say it. I don't believe it. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Coon Review. When we return, we'll talk Redskin Report. That's coming up, and much, much more in this latest edition of Cyril Coon Review. We'll be right back. Thank you. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Serial Coon Review. 347-215-6180 is your call number as we discuss the world of sports. 347-215-6180. I'm glad I had 2 days to kind of like process my thoughts after watching that just disgraceful performance by the Washington Redskins on Thursday night. I'm glad I didn't have to come on Friday morning or even post game like we've done a couple times before in previous seasons of this show, because I don't know what I could have did a show. I mean, I don't know what I would have said. And, you know, after initially being just, you know, blown away by that, just, I don't know if you want to call it a performance. I don't know what you call that, what the Redskins put out there on Thursday night. I came to the conclusion that this is just who they are. Not so much as a team, but as a franchise. So when you lose a game like that, it doesn't speak to where you are as a team in 2014, week four of the NFL season. It speaks to where you are at as a franchise in 2014. And it speaks to the fact that the culture of the franchise needs to be changed. Who's going to change that? Who knows? Because the same people, you know, Daniel Snyder, Bruce Allen, those people who probably, you know, in a perfect world, if you're a Redskins fan, would be, you know, gone as far as, you know, having Daniel Snyder sell the team or having Bruce Allen get fired, they're not going anywhere anytime soon. They're not. And this is who the Redskins are right now. They are a franchise who gave up the farm basically for a quarterback who cannot stay on the field. Okay? They are a franchise who is devoid of talent mainly because they messed up their cap situation and it cost them $36 million of cap space in back-to-back years where they could have been acquiring quality talent, quality players to have depth on the team. Thank you, Bruce Allen, because he was supposed to be the so-called capologist, cap expert. That was supposed to be his specialty. He's sure as hell not picking players on the high level, and that's not what he does. They're a franchise who brings in a new coach, and then that coach can't even pick his own defensive coordinator. He inherits a defensive coordinator, a defense last year that ranked 30th out of 32 teams in total defense. That's what they are as a franchise. And again, more than any other league, any other professional sports league, the NFL exposes you. It exposes your flaws as a team, as a franchise, to the utmost degree. So, you know, they're 1-3 right now. You have Seattle coming up. You have Arizona coming up. So they could be easily staring at 1-5, at best 2-4. There's no way there would be zero chance they win both those games. But this is who they are. This is who they are as a franchise. You know, all I heard in the preseason, Kirk Cousins, better fit for the offense. You know, it's not even a quarterback competition. Then he goes out and plays well against Philadelphia, even though they lose the game, and people want to put him in the Pro Bowl. Kirk Cousins is a good player, is a solid player. He is on a good team, he is a great backup. He could be a starter on a team that's 6-10, 4-12, 5-11. He's not a starter on a playoff team or a playoff caliber team, period. He's just not at that level yet. He's 0-4 in his last four starts, going back to last year. And he's been god-awful against the Giants. I mean, some of those throws that he made, it wasn't even about pressure. It was just horrible throws. It wasn't about the Giant pass rush. The Giant pass rush is not great. I mean, it's decent. It's not great. Not what it used to be when they had Justin Tuck and O.C. Uminora in his prime and Strahan. That's not at that level. Nowhere close. It's decent. Pierre Paul is not the – I mean, Jason Pierre Paul is not the same player he was 2 years ago. He's okay at this point. He's not great. So, I mean, Phil Simms talking about this great Giant pass rush. But no, it's not a great pass rush. It's okay. Redskin offensive line is just that bad in terms of getting pressure. But it wasn't even about the Redskin offensive line. I mean, I know Tyler Palamas gets beat, which has become a regular occurrence. But the Redskin offensive line, I don't think played poorly. I mean, it was Kirk Cousins. Again, the Redskins are in need of a change of culture. Forget about just name change, but a change of culture. Until they get a real personnel person, team president, general manager, who knows how to draft and pick players, this is the product that you're going to see on the field. Week in, week out, year in, and year out. There's not one player, RG3 or whoever, that can hide that or that can save them from that fact. 347-215-6180 is the call number on this latest edition of the Silicon Review. We'll do some baseball when we get back. Also, NFL picks coming up. Week 4 in the league where no contract is guaranteed. That's coming up and much, much more in this latest edition of the Silicon Review. We'll be right back. Back to this latest edition of the Silicon Review. 347-215-6180 is the call number as we discuss the world of sports. Congratulations to the Kansas City Royals. They clinched their first playoff berth in 29 years. It's just remarkable. And you got to go back to, Huey Lewis in the news, the 80s. So, that is a long time not to make the playoffs, but they finally get back to the playoffs. Get back to the playoffs. They, of course, led by the great pitching, big game, James Shields. Be very interesting to watch them in the playoffs. But it's certainly the fans. Those fans were well deserving of a team. Cause, I mean, they had been horrible for so long. And, I mean, the only thing they've been known for was basically giving the Yankees, top prospects or not top prospects, but good players, that would help the Yankees win. But now they're back in the playoffs and the Yankees are not. So, hey, Kansas City getting getting the last laugh from that standpoint. Still a couple things to be decided. All the, with the exception of the AL Central and AL Central, all the divisions have been wrapped up. Of course, you still have Pittsburgh and St. Louis battling for the NL Central. St. Louis is up by one game. Pittsburgh's been playing great of late. The winner of that will certainly host the win. Excuse me, the loser of the division will host the San Francisco Giants in that wild card matchup. So it could be San Francisco, St. Louis, or Pittsburgh, St. Louis. Then you have the American League. Oakland would basically have to collapse to not win a division, not get that second wild card. Very interesting with Oakland, despite the collapse, and it was a tremendous collapse as far as the division goes. You know, you get in the playoffs, all that, you know, it doesn't mean anything at that point. Nobody cares about your September, August swoon. Just get in the playoffs. I mean, the collapse only means something. It only takes form when you don't make the playoffs. You make the playoffs, nobody, it's not a collapse anymore, because the goal going to the season in April was to either win, probably was to win the division, but just get to the playoffs. So if I'm Oakland, I could care less, as long as we, and it certainly is looking like, any combination of a loss or an Oakland win or a Seattle loss will put Oakland in the playoffs. All I'm concerned about is making the playoffs. Nationals are very interesting from a standpoint. They clinch home field advantage throughout the NL playoffs. They have a 17-game lead. The reason why I bring that up is, it's obviously you want to win your division, you want to have a great record, but they really didn't have any pressure games in the whole month of September. I mean, you think about it, and that is a tricky spot to be in if you're Matt Williams managing that team. It's a good problem to have, but not playing pressure games for a month, and then all of a sudden walking into a postseason, and you're going to face a team. I don't care whether it's San Francisco, they're not going to face the Dodgers, of course. The Dodgers have the second best record in the NL. But you're going to face San Francisco, St. Louis, or Pittsburgh. You're going to face three teams that have been playing pressure baseball basically for the entire season, especially in particular the months of August and September. So, again, sometimes you can win a division too easily, and it could be a detriment, even though we all know that, again, the Nationals are as complete of a team as there is in baseball. It's certainly one of the favorites to win the World Series. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Quinn Review. When we come back, the league where no contract is guaranteed. We will talk, we will have NFL picks, that's coming up, and much, much more in this latest edition of Cyril Quinn Review. We'll be right back. Contracts is guaranteed. The quarter pole for some teams, or for most teams, the quarter pole. There are, of course, a few teams that have bye weeks, but for the most teams, this will be their fourth game played of the season. First month will be in the books, and we head to Houston. The surprising Texans, 2-1, hosting the surprising Bills at 2-1. Texans come in as a 3-point favorite, basically, which is a pick-em considering they're hosting the game. And both teams, again, as we, sorry for that technical issue we had. Again, you have two surprising teams with Houston and Buffalo. I like the Bills in this game. I think the Bills, first of all, I think the Bills have the better quarterback. I like E.J. Manuel a lot better than I like Ryan Fitzpatrick. Arian Foster, who knows whether he'll play or not. The Bills, again, have some explosive weapons on offense. And most importantly, that defensive line, the Bills' deep front seven is tremendous. They have one of the best front sevens in all of football. I think they will make Ryan Fitzpatrick beat them. I don't think he will be able to. I'll take the Bills. Close game, 20-17, to outright take out the Houston Texans, despite the fact that Houston is favored by three points. Game number two, New England at Kansas City. My upset special of the week. I know New England is a slight favorite heading into Kansas City. I have not liked the way New England's offense has performed. Kansas City can run the ball, whether even Jamal Charles doesn't play. There are some thoughts that he might play. Alex Smith, not great, but solid. The New England passing game has not looked good. I know Brady has not thrown an interception, but he's only thrown three touchdowns and only completing 58% of his passes. Just something off about New England's offense right now. Gronkowski still trying to work himself back into the mix. Their running game is okay, not great. Offensive line has not performed well. They definitely missed Logan Mankins. Defense has played well, but I'm taking Kansas City. I like Kansas City. Kansas City did not play well. Kansas City played well last week. Didn't play poorly against Denver. At Denver, held their own. I like Kansas City to win this game outright. Say 21-17. I'll take the Kansas City Chiefs. Game number three, Tampa Bay at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh 7.5-point favorites over Tampa Bay. That's too many points. I know Tampa Bay has been awful this year. I know they have been. But think about this. They're 0-3. They're coming off that embarrassment 10 days ago on Thursday Night Football where they were just manhandled by Atlanta. This is the NFL, and, teams do have pride, believe it or not, despite what you watched on against Washington and the Giants. Teams do have pride. I think Tampa Bay will play well. They'll be in the game. Remember, Pittsburgh's banged up defensively, three starters out against for a defense that wasn't playing great to begin with. I like Tampa Bay to stay in the game. I'll take Tampa Bay with the points. I'll take Pittsburgh to win 27-24, but Tampa Bay keeps this close. And finally, a bonus game, Jets versus Detroit, hosting Detroit. Detroit is not good enough to be favored on the road against a decent team. Jets are not a great team. They're decent, though. They have an excellent defensive line. They're great against the run. I could see them forcing Detroit to be one-dimensional. When Detroit is one-dimensional, that's when Stafford has tendency to throw picks and to force feed Calvin Johnson. I could definitely see that being the case. I'll take the Jets to beat Detroit. Around 27-23. It'll be a close game. Again, the Jets did not play poorly against the Bears. I don't see them losing back-to-back home games. So, Buffalo to take out Houston. Pittsburgh to beat Tampa, though Tampa with the points. New England loses to Kansas City. Kansas City outright upsets New England. And the Jets take out the Detroit Lions. Those are my week four picks in the league where no contract is guaranteed. We'll be right back. three other games of notes involving all Super Bowl, well, supposedly Super Bowl contenders coming into the season, San Francisco, Philadelphia. Now, Philly has a tremendous opportunity here because if you can go into San Francisco's place and take them out, get the 4-0 and put them at 2-2, and that would be a big-time victory for the Eagles. I think San Francisco will win the game. Will win the game coming off the loss that they're coming off against Arizona, which is not a bad team, of course. Arizona is very good, but just I think San Francisco is desperate right now. You know, there's some talks about Harbaugh and Kaepernick. We all know about the injuries and the suspensions that he have on defense. They're vulnerable right now. There's no question about it. But I have to think that they'll be able to rally enough. They have enough veterans on that team to get the job done against an Eagle team that is bad defensively, but we know how explosive they are offensively with, of course, led by LeSean McCoy and company. Again, very interesting game to watch. Watch around 4:25 tomorrow with San Francisco. Again, a strength versus strength game, great offense versus great defense down in New San Francisco's new ballpark, new stadium, I should say. Also, you have Green Bay traveling to Chicago. Chicago coming off a very good win on the road against the Jets on Monday night. Green Bay coming off a brutal loss versus Detroit. One of those shake your head losses in terms of not being able to put any points on the board. Only scored 7 points. Aaron Rodgers had probably one of his worst days as a starter for the Packers. Didn't play well. I can't see Green Bay having back-to-back bad performances against division foes, in particular two division opponents over the years that they have owned in Detroit and Chicago. I think Green Bay gives a good performance and takes out Chicago. They're 18-9 against Chicago in their last 20 and since 2001, but. Right now, again, like San Francisco, Green Bay is very vulnerable right now, without question. They're soft defensively. The running game's been struggling. They don't have as many weapons offensively as they've had in the past. No James Jones, of course. Donald Driver, guys like that. So it'll be very interesting watching that game. Again, Chicago, you have an opportunity if you're Chicago to really put Green Bay in a tough spot here. I mean, 1-3 and 0-2 in a division. That's not where Green Bay obviously will want to be at. So we'll see what happens there. Of course, Green Bay is in the midst of three straight games against divisional road opponents that will be capped off Thursday night at Lambeau Field against the Minnesota Vikings. So, you know, if you're Green Bay, you win this game, you get the 2-2, you're facing a struggling Minnesota team, you could be right back in a good place at 3-2. Before you know it, you could be 2-1 in the division, and 10 days off. So, I mean, things can change quickly in the NFL with just one victory, as we all know. And, of course, finally, the other 1-2 Super Bowl contender that's struggling, the New Orleans Saints, travel to Arlington to take on, in Jerry's house, to take on the Dallas Cowboys. I don't know what the Cowboys are. I understand that they've won their last two road games on the road, but they've been, I mean, Tennessee and, you know, St. Louis are two non-playoff teams, will be non-playoff teams. Neither one of those teams are making the playoffs. They, you know, were knocked around by San Francisco in week one. So I'm still trying to figure out who Dallas is. You'll get a decent indication against a desperate Saints team that like Green Bay and like San Francisco is struggling offensively. I don't expect that to last for long. I expect a big performance out of New Orleans in this game. They have owned Dallas the last couple times they've played them. Sean Payton loves sticking it to Dallas. I really expect the Saints to handle the Cowboys. I really do. I can see the 38-24, 31-17, that type of game. I think the Cowboys are going to be in for a long night against New Orleans Saints. I expect the Saints to get clicking offensively against the Cowboys. So, Very interesting week of NFL for the of NFL football. Hopefully it have a carryover effect from that awful Thursday night game with the Redskins and the Giants. And if you're the NFL right now, obviously the ratings are going to be high. You're making money hand over foot, but you cannot be happy with what you've seen so far this season on Thursday night. On Thursday night, all the games have been awful. I mean, awful. Where they've been basically over by the third quarter. Okay. I mean, maybe with the exception of the Baltimore Pittsburgh game, which was competitive into the fourth quarter, but none of the games have been close into the fourth quarter. Road teams minus the Giants have been awful. So can't be happy about what's transpired on Thursday nights if you're the NFL. Because you began the program talking about Derek Jeter, the just wonderful career that he's had, which of course capped off Thursday night on a walk-off hit in typical Jeter fashion against the Baltimore Orioles to give the Yankees a meaningless win. But again, Jeter ends his career, his Yankee Stadium career, in style with a clutch hit, a place where he had many clutch hits in the postseason, whether it is the Jeffrey Mayer hit against Baltimore in the 96 LCS, or it's the famous Mr. November home run off in the World Series against Arizona in Game 5. Jeter is an all-time great, without question. Is he? I mean, would you put him on a level as Babe Ruth, Ted Williams, Willie Mays? No, he's not quite on that level, but he's still an all-time great. Definitely one of the great shortstops of all time, one of the great Yankees of all time, which is saying a lot. I would rank him behind Mariano Rivera. A lot of people rank Jeter in the top six of the Yankees. I would go Ruth, Garrick, Mantle, DiMaggio, Mariano Rivera, Yogi Berra, and then Derek Jeter. So I would actually go probably seventh among. I would put him seventh around Yankees. But this debate, you can go either way. But seeing a guy who didn't do anything, never did anything to embarrass himself on or off the field, played hard every day, was good for 150 games a year, was always good for between 150 and 200 hits. And again, a guy to me whose talent is underrated. This guy was a very talented player. I mean, should have been the number one pick in the draft in 1992. The Houston Astros, certainly hear that. You can certainly, catch up on that story on why and how Houston didn't take him. But this guy was a very talented player besides all the intangibles in terms of being a winner and things of that nature. That's going to wrap it up for this latest edition of the Circle Review. I will see you next week for another episode of the Circle Review, next Saturday, certainly, and we're still looking at either Tuesday or Wednesday for our Boardwalk Empire recap, featuring Rob Sapp and Chad Quinn. Have a great, great weekend.